Are back.
Yes. And better than ever.
Well, it's debatable.
Dumber than ever.
Hey, that's a new voice, Jim. Why don't you let the 12 Saturdays audience know who the third amigo is?
Yes, we are 50% larger than previous seasons with myself, James Bladel, and of course, Tori Brecht, and Bill Delahunt has joined our team this year. Welcome, Bill, formerly and notoriously known as on Hawkeye Report as Flick Shagwell.
Hello, hello.
Awesome. So, yeah, we took a year off. I think we took maybe the Seinfeld approach there, which is go out on top. I mean, how do you top 2015, guys?
I mean, an undefeated season was pretty great, and I don't know. I think maybe we just had a huge, huge hangover from the Rose Bowl beatdown. We just didn't have the heart to get back at it, and your travel schedule is bad, and you know, so we took the year off. But I think, you know, much like the addition of Brian Ferentz has seemingly breathed a little new life into the program, I'm feeling a little frisky. How about you, Bill?
I'm loving it. I want to make the $1 million an episode here that the Seinfeld guys were making. I'm ready. Let's do this.
Well, it's at least $1 million. I mean, we didn't specify in your contract, but yes, Bill, we'll just call you the Brian Ferentz of the 12 Saturdays crew here. We're looking for big things. No pressure, but you have to kind of rescue this podcast.
Well, I'm ready. Let's see if I can deliver.
Well, and I should add for those, hopefully we have some new listeners that haven't heard us before. You know, the 12 Saturdays podcast is really, I feel it's a little unique and different. It's really from the fans' perspective. So it's trying to give you from the fans' eye view. You know, Bill, Jim and I have had season tickets together for quite some time. We go to quite a few away games. I know Bill makes it to a lot of games. So, you know, we want to be the podcast that's kind of the voice of the fans that you know, lets you feel the way you feel about it. And, you know, we never say we have a lot of insider information, and we're certainly not football geniuses. Well, maybe Bill. I don't know. He coaches.
He's pretty much a genius, yeah.
That's true. Guilty as charged.
Well, and you know, yeah, if we can channel that angst, and I think we represent the gamut here, Tori. I mean, you've got the perennial optimist, and we've got the pessimist and the realist, and I guess Bill, you kind of have to split the difference there with your encyclopedic knowledge of Hawkeye football and just college football generally.
So wait, just to be clear, that what you're stating is that cynicism and negativity is the realist approach. Is that what I want to understand, Jim?
You follow college football, right? I mean, you follow the Hawkeyes. This is kind of the long-term, you know, you have your moments of glory, but you have to slog through some of those seasons, like last year, like 2014. I mean, you got to pay your dues.
Fair enough.
Well, and while we were touting that, Bill, we kind of held you up as this almost like a savant when it comes to Hawkeye football, and you were actually talking to us offline a couple days ago about this first season, week one opponent, Wyoming. And apparently we've tangled with them once before. I didn't know that.
It's actually been twice. 1953, beat them at Kinnick 21-7. 1987, faced them in the Holiday Bowl and ended up having to block a go-ahead field goal and intercept a pass from them in the last couple minutes to get around them. Beat them 20-19, and Merton Hanks was the savior of that game. Had a blocked punt, blocked PAT, or field goal, and the interception on the game's last Hail Mary.
So, sanity it is that, now they're an FCS school, right?
No, they're Mountain West, I believe. Okay, they were okay when we faced them before, so they're D1. FBS.
Okay, okay. Because I was thinking, how crazy is it that we had to block a PAT to beat you and I the year we actually went to the Orange Bowl, and then we had to block a PAT or short field goal against Wyoming in the Holiday Bowl to secure a bowl win. It's kind of crazy to think about, you know, those are the kind of teams that you're not supposed to have to pull those kind of histrionics out to beat, right?
The double blocked field goal on you and I mean, it was just completely improbable, and they were both chip shots. But this is 87, so this was the year, this was 2 years after the Rose Bowl then, right, Bill?
Yeah, Iowa was 10-1, I believe, 10-2 that season in 1987.
Yeah, 10-2 that seems we beat like it them. Get you better than the Holiday Bowl. But there were fewer bowls back then.
There were a lot fewer bowls back then.
All right, I checked that. It's 10-3. Yeah, we in Iowa actually had some tough Holiday Bowls back then. In 1986, Rob Houtland had to hit a last-second field goal to beat San Diego State. And then in 1991, we tied Ty Detmer's BYU team that 10-1-1 year.
And wasn't that, if I recall correctly, because I actually was a sophomore, I think, in college that year, maybe a junior. And that was an exceedingly boring bowl game. Wasn't it like a 10-10 tie and very little action?
It was indeed. Yeah. Yeah. These Mountain West schools, when I was tangled with them, they give us all we can ask for.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. And
historically, it's been years since we played one.
Yeah, just commenting on how unfair it is, by the way, to play San Diego State in the freaking Holiday Bowl. That's lame. But I will say, though, I'm glad to see that the Holiday Bowl is back in the Big Ten rotation. I know, Tori, you were a big fan of the Alamo Bowl, which is rotated off. But I'm excited about the possibility of going to San Diego, maybe even this year.
Well, yeah, I mean, you got craft beer and legal weed and football games. So, I mean, I don't know what more you want in a college football game. But, I mean, that's the one reason I like the Alamo Bowl is just because of San Antonio's setup as for a football weekend. I mean, the stadium, the hotel, the Riverwalk, and all the bars and restaurants are literally within stumbling distance of each other. And that's pretty nice compared to, you know, like going to Tampa and the stadium's kind of just out in the middle of nowhere, and the hotels are all spread over, and some people stay in Clearwater, et cetera. I like the idea of the neat little compact area you can go to.
Bill, you ever been to Holiday Bowl? You were out there in L.A. for a few years. Did you ever drive down and pick one up?
Not the actual game. I've been to downtown San Diego, which is where that stadium is, and yeah, there's a million hotels and bars right there. That would be a great bowl setting. Well, definitely very similar to San Antonio. I was there for the Texas game in 2006, which didn't turn out our way.
Oh, that was a bunch of crap too, on a bad call. But well, that's interesting. I had not realized that we'd played Wyoming twice. I mean, I remember the Holiday Bowl, but the thing going back in the 50s, that must have been shortly after some of those powerhouse Iowa teams of the was that the late 50s? Early 50s?
It was October 17th, 1953.
Oh, okay, so that would have been a few years before. So, and it probably wasn't called Kinnick Stadium back then. It was called...
That would have been the old Iowa Stadium.
Yeah, all right. A little bit of history there.
And I should note that we're going forward, we'll be calling that segment Encyclopedia Bill.
Yes.
And, you know, maybe someday we'll have like a sound effect for it.
If we ever get off our butts and actually do some work on this podcast.
That little "the more you know" thing. Just picture that.
That's a good
Shwing!
One.
I can do that noise, maybe.
Close. All right. Well, thanks, Bill. We have a number of ideas for segments. And, of course, you know, we're always taking suggestions. You can always tweet at us at 12 Saturdays and send us your ideas. We have some other thoughts. And one of them, I think, that Tori, and it's kind of interesting that you chose this one as your segment for 2017 was this idea that you would have Tori's weekly rant, and I don't know how to segue from Bill's, you know, kind of cut and dry by the numbers presentation of our opponent, but you actually want to step out of the quantitative into the qualitative discussion of Wyoming, right?
I want to be the id of the fan base, and specifically it's the oppositional rant. Although an oppositional ranch kind of sounds like an interesting place to visit too. I don't know. But no, I mean, I've got a lot of problems with a lot of teams around college football, especially ones Iowa plays quite a bit. So yeah, just from a visceral emotional standpoint, and you know, Wyoming themselves, I don't have a lot of feelings for other than their baby poop brown uniforms are kind of lame. That kind of annoys me. But what annoys me, what I want to kind of rant about is, and it started with North Dakota State, and what really ticks me off is they actually backed it up. But if you ever go to like some of the message boards or listen to some of these better teams that are out of FCS or non-Power 5 conferences, they have this huge inferiority complex that comes out as like braggy and superiority, actually. You know, like, well, you know, if we actually played in the Big Ten, we'd go like 10-2 every year and blah, blah, blah. And then, yeah, sure, they managed to beat a big-time team every once in a while. You know, I think, North Dakota State's beaten Minnesota, Iowa, like two or three teams in a row. But my thing is, yeah, you get to get up for that one big-time game once a year. Yeah, that makes you real fancy that you can barely choke out a win every once in a while by like 2 points. You need some kind of luck. And then you go around talking about how you dominate in a Power 5. Well, you know what? Go play some frickin' teams during the rest of the year. I mean, the rest of your schedule is just wet toilet paper, you know? It's like, ooh, I beat Indiana State. Big frickin' deal. That doesn't mean anything. So that ticks me off. And well, it was especially bad to have to listen to North Dakota State fans at Kinnick and online, you know, talking about how they're some kind of frickin' powerhouse. But, you know, you put them in the SEC, Big Ten, or Big 12 on a week-to-week basis, and in my opinion, they're going to basically look like Minnesota or Northwestern.
So that's you hit on it the last thing you said, which is the week-to-week basis. Is anybody can get up for one game a year, and you know, and basically save all your powder for that one game. It's the beating each other up. It's the accumulation of bumps and bruises and injuries. It's going to those hostile stadiums, you know, week after week or every other week or whatever. And yeah, I think they look like more like Indiana or Purdue if they do that. My beef, if I can pile onto your rant, is why are we scheduling these damn teams? I'm so tired of this. You know, you look at Wisconsin and these other folks in there, and you know, these teams that are scheduling like championship contenders of other Power 5 conferences, either at home and home or neutral site. And they're doing this. And even if you lose, I think you have more credibility. If you lose to, if you schedule like a Georgia or a UCLA and you lose to them, so what? I think it's better to do that than to take a chance on a North Dakota or a Wyoming or even a UNI and get their best shot that they're going to put together their best game for the entire year and come at you and possibly make history. And we are still, and I said it at the time, and a lot of folks are, oh, you know, they're five-time national champs. I don't care. Nobody's ever going to let Iowa live down that North Dakota game. That's going to haunt us for decades, and we're still talking about it, and I predict we will be for a long time to come.
Jim, I think that's a great point, and I agree with you. It's just so hard to get around the Iowa State game and the nine-game Big Ten scheduling. So unless we can kick the clowns off or play them every other year, we're going to be stuck having these teams that will only come to Kinnick, and you kind of limit yourself. No, we're no LSUs or Floridas, anything like that. My beef, and it's very similar to yours, is why are we digging up these teams no one's heard of that can actually stand in the ring with Iowa and punch with us? That North Dakota State game, you know, anybody down in Baton Rouge or something is looking at our schedule like, oh, that's a piece of cake schedule. Then we end up losing. You know, there's nothing to gain from playing North Dakota State. Yep. Maybe even this Wyoming team might be salty. If you're going to get a Sisters of the Poor school, get the Sisters of the Poor. Let's beat them 56-0 at halftime, and the Scrubs play the third and fourth quarter, and we go out and have a beer, and it's a good time. I don't want to be on pins and needles in the fourth quarter against no one.
Exactly. Yeah, you got to fill
if
that.
You're gonna eat a cupcake, I want it to be a sweet, delicious, caloric cupcake, not some kind of crappy gluten-free kale cupcake that
with
makes
a rock
me
in it.
Exactly. Yeah. Which is what the teams we're scheduling do. Yeah, give me, you know, Our Lady of the Worthless Miracle. Let's play them.
Yeah, and that's what Alabama does. That's what Florida State, that's what Clemson. You look at your schedule, these SEC teams, they're playing a bunch of, you know, Eastern you know, Eastern Kentucky Polytechnical and all this crap, and they're beating him up 60. They're not putting, like, you know, Arkansas State or one of these, you know, mid-level powerhouses from Conference USA or something. You know, they're going, exactly, Tori, they're going for the soft, squishy pastries. And I understand what you're saying, Bill, and I think you do that for the first game of the year, and you'll sell out Kinnick, no problem. There's your home game.
On a more serious note, though, realistically, I think I really would like to see Barta start to explore more seriously some of these alternative site games. You know, I went to the Northern Illinois game at Soldier Field. That was pretty cool. But imagine if we were playing like Notre Dame there, or how about we play Missouri down in Kansas City or something like that? You know, that way you don't have to worry about you know, the home and home kind of series situation that you struggle with, but you still get a marquee game every once in a while. And I am totally on board. I would love to see the Iowa State game be 2 years on, 2 years off. I think it'd be better for them in the long run too. I mean, I know it's a big revenue generator for them, but I mean, come on, man. I mean, being handcuffed to the same team, even though it's a rivalry year in and year out, just sucks. I mean, remember didn't play Wisconsin for a few years. And as soon as the rivalry picked back up, man, it was right at the high level it's been at. So I don't think anything will be lost from the rivalry if we don't play every single year.
From your lips to God's ears.
I agree. And I think Iowa, just as a state, is probably also behind the eight ball, just because we don't have those neutral NFL sites. So we got to borrow one from Kansas City or Chicago or St. Louis or something like that. So, but yeah, well, good conversation. And I think it's something that we can think about when we, during our next segment, when we talk to our guest. And Tori, would you like to introduce him?
So, very exciting guest for our reboot podcast here. We have Scott Dockerman, a fantastic longtime Hawkeye reporter, formerly of the Gazette, now with the internet site Land of 10. Scott, welcome. Always good to hear from you.
Yeah, it's great to have me on again. Thanks so much for letting me join you on your first reboot.
Well, awesome. I'm going to turn the reins over to Bill, who's been chomping at the bit, actually, to pick your brain a little bit about some depth chart issues and, you know, I think just generally how this 2017 team is looking.
Hey, Scott, Bill Delahant here. Obviously, the depth chart came out today, the week one depth chart. So set in stone is that Stanley will be our starter, QB. I think what sticks out to me kind of is Brandon Smith's name and Matt Corral's in the depth chart. I'm looking at those receivers. Is there anything that kind of surprises you or something that we fans should keep an eye on from the depth chart?
The first point that I looked at and noticed was there are seven true freshmen on the two deeps, and that's way more than what we've seen in the past. I think we've had three or four before, like last year, Keith Duncan was among them. I mean, you know, just small little slivers, but when you're seeing guys on the offensive and defensive lines, you know, A.J. Epineza, Tristan Wirfs, that really jumped out at me. And, you know, Geno Stone and a lot of these guys, you know, in the Land of 10, we do what we call next generation projects. And so we went and visited almost every single player in this class. We missed two because the class is starting in June. And so we got to know a lot of them really, you know, up close and personal, their families. So I think Brandon Smith, I was really impressed with him, you know, both as a person and just what I've seen of him on, you know, up close on the field and then, you know, and then on his video, because, you know, he's got a legitimate, not only Big Ten body, but, you know, NFL caliber wide receiver body. I mean, he's 6'3", probably 210. His hands are so big. It's hard to even describe how big these hands are. And he runs good routes. And you look at him and you think, well, you know, the kid's only a true freshman. So what's he going to be like when he's a junior? So I'm really impressed with him. You know, Geno Stone was a kid that I went out and visited him. I went to Brandon Smith's place in Mississippi, but I went to Geno Stone's in Newcastle, Pennsylvania. And he was one of those classic Iowa guys, and he wants to be one of those. Overlooked by everybody, wanted to go to Penn State. They invited him a lot for some visits, but never really, you know, they didn't offer him. And then Michigan State was close to offering him, actually was going to have him come up and visit and probably he was going to commit. But then Michigan State called him out 3 days before the visit and said, no, we're canceling your visit. We had somebody commit. So kind of shut the door in his face. And then Iowa was able to scoop in at the last minute. And now here he is on the two deep, and kid only had 17 interceptions in high school, one of the most competitive leagues in the country. So, I looked at some of those guys, and that really, it was kind of a surprise, but in a way it wasn't. Stanley decision is huge. I mean, I think he was the guy I thought he was all along, but you look at him and Tyler Wiegers. Wiegers had a confidence about him that I think translated, that people could, he was kind of more of a leader, more vocal for sure. But Stanley had all the tangibles you want. He's a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger, incredibly strong arm. I like the way he throws the ball down the field. He can learn how to throw with a little more touch, but I think he's pretty accurate. And, they can grow with him. He just turned 19 on Saturday. So it's just a really kind of jars you a little bit with how young he is. And then, you look at, a couple of the big guys, A.J. Epineza, he fits the part. And he and Tristan Wirfs and probably Brandon Smith are all like this, where you think, they look the part now. Just wait 2 years and see what they do. So I would say those jumped out. The change at kicker definitely jumped out. Miguel Racinos beating out Keith Duncan. That really kind of surprised me. And, but other than that, I thought it was interesting. It's kind of a marker. One of the things with the offensive line is it's just kind of on paper, because if, like, say, Boone Myers can't play, generally they'd probably move Ike Bucker to left tackle and bring somebody else to play right tackle. So, those are things you watch for later on, but it's always good to get kind of that baseline. And I was kind of glad to see it today, finally.
So Scott, in the past, if I'd have seen, seven or eight freshmen in the two deeps, I'd probably be a little nervous about, geez, what's going on? But it sounds like they're pretty impressive physical specimens. Do you think this is like a conscious decision to kind of go with a youth movement? And you know what? Now, when you were talking, that it kind of reminded me of a little bit, and not to get too out and over my skis, but if I recall correctly, 2002, we had quite a few freshmen play, and we had a first year quarterback too, and that team turned out to do okay.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'll ever help compare this team to that team, because it was such a good team. But I think what this is, there are spots on this team that, really needed true freshmen to play and step forward. And wide receiver, of course, was first, and then in the secondary as well. But then I think there are players that are just too good. And you look at them physically, and they're just too good to sit on the bench in redshirt. A.J. Epineza being one, because you could say on the defense that the deepest one position is defensive end. But yet here they are, and A.J. Epineza is going to play as much as everybody else because he's that good. Likewise, with Tristan Wirfs, you look at him and you think, okay, well, Iowa's got three seniors and two juniors starting on what the Joe Moore Award considered the best offensive line in football. I mean, they only lose eight starts. Why would you want to bring up a true freshman like that? Well, because he's going to start next year, and they figure, let's get him some snaps this year. And again, physically, he is impressive. I can't remember an offensive lineman that I looked at and I went, okay, wow, he's got a legit body, and at age, 18 is it's shocking almost. So I think, so those are almost luxuries, and then you look at guys like Ivory Kelly Martin. He fills a specific role. He's going to be a kick returner, and he's kind of a backup when they run in the slot, at running back. So I think it's kind of a mixture. Your guys that you absolutely need, a Matt Hankins, a Geno Stone, a Brandon Smith, and a couple other receivers who aren't on the two deep who will play, like Max Cooper and Amir Smith-Marset. But then when you have guys like Epineza and Wirfs who are just too good to sit, they want to get them out there playing because they're going to have a big role, not only this year, but in the future.
Hey, Scott, one more question about the receivers. I heard you list a couple more guys that weren't on the depth chart, but that you're expecting to see play. Adrian Falconer is nowhere to be seen. Settle an argument that I'm having with me and my friends. Does he actually exist? What's going on with him?
He does exist, so I don't know which side that puts you on, but he does exist. He's actually got, he and Devontae Young have kind of the biggest bodies I've seen at a wide receiver, just physically impressive, that you're like, wow, they're well put together. But you know, Falconer, you know, and it was strange because for so long, Kelton Copeland, the new wide receivers coach, has been praising him as being this great wide receiver. You know, he's made a lot of strides, but it just didn't show up. And you look at the other guys, I mean, they've got more potential. Amir Smith-Marset is a speedster. He can get deep. He can beat anybody. He's that fast. So he's going to get in the game, and they're going to ask him to stretch the field, or he's going to do end-arounds or something like that. Brandon Smith is your classic split end, you know, tall, strong, you know, beat guys physically as much as anything else. And then, you know, Max Cooper can catch anything. I mean, you throw him the ball behind his head, he'll catch it. And so he's going to be a mass, you know, a big asset. I think he'll be maybe starting next year, be the punt returner, you know, and also be a guy who, you know, is kind of your classic overachiever. You know, and I really like Devontae Young, you know, the true sophomore. I mean, this is only, you know, he's only been on campus a year, and everybody kind of wrote him off, but I think he's a good player. And then you look at Quarles. So, you know, Adrian Falconer, you know, there was a lot of competition. He didn't show me anything really in the spring. And so now he's, you know, what, 8-9 deep. You know, he never redshirted here at Iowa, and you start to see the numbers game creep up. And, you know, usually that means after this season.
One of the things I picked up on in your coverage and just the general coverage coming up the last couple of weeks was Phil Parker seems to be uncharacteristically gushing about the defensive line and just its ability to pressure the quarterback and knock down passes. And I mean, is there something there? Is he blowing smoke, or are you guys seeing it too? Because that's been absent, I think, for the last couple of years on these defenses.
Yeah, he said this is the best defensive line that he's had as the coordinator, and I agree with him. You look at, you know, the size that they have, the athletic ability that they display, and, you know, and the depth. I think this is by far the best that he's had to work with, and I would go as far back as, say, 2010 when they had Claiborne and Ballard and Bins and Daniels and Carl Klug and those guys. I mean, there's legitimate NFL-caliber players on the, you know, at multiple spots. Sometimes they'd have, you know, where one year it might be the defensive end was really good and the tackles weren't, or vice versa. You know, one year you'd have, you know, Carl Davis and Louis Trinka-Passat, and the next year it'd be Drew Ott, you know, and young guys in the inside. So I think now he's got, you know, more versatility. When you're looking at, you know, 6'8 to 6'9 and Matt Nelson inside getting his hands up, yeah, they're going to knock down a lot of passes. Same thing with Anthony Nelson, who's 6'7". And I think he's secretly he's got a chance to be a breakout star this year. I mean, a lot of people are concentrating, and rightly so, on Epineza and his skills. But, I mean, Anthony Nelson really has a good first step, quick step. And he's tall, very athletic. I think he can really break people off the ball. And he's getting bigger physically. But then you throw on, you know, Parker Hesse's the, you know, really the overlooked guy. And he's just a relentless, tenacious guy. And on third down, you know, what we were seeing in the one glimpse we did have was Parker Hesse would move inside and A.J. Epineza would move in at defensive end, and they'd either have Brady Reef or Matt Nelson in there. And you're thinking, you know, four defensive ends on the field, and all of them have good pass rushing ability. You know, that way they don't have to run the Raider anymore. They don't have to do a lot of the junk kind of coverage. And if they can get pressure with that front four and knock down passes, then, you know, then they can sit back in their zone, and it's really hard to pick people apart. If you rush the passer, you can get in their face and you know, cause some turnovers. So I agree wholeheartedly with him. And really, you know, the only senior out of that whole bunch is Nathan Budgeta, you know, at defensive tackle. So they've got a really good young group, probably a lot like the 2009 group. And you can just see in the future that this is going to be a special unit.
Well, Parker Hesse is always going to have a place in my heart for his tip and pick six against Nebraska. So, love that. And I know Bill loves that, too. Switching gears just a little bit on you, Doc, I wanted to talk a little bit about Land of 10 and, you know, your move into the online platform. And I know you mentioned, you know, you've been I have noticed the really interesting job you guys have been doing, kind of getting to know and do some in-depth reporting on some of these young recruit kids even before they step foot in Iowa. I don't recall that being something you had the luxury to do very often when you were working for the Gazette. So tell me a little bit about the new job and how it's different than being a newspaper beat reporter.
It's actually quite a bit different. I mean, I still cover the team. I still write a lot of some of those stories, but our approach is different. And it's changing. It's evolving over time. I mean, when I was at the Gazette, I focused a lot on off the field type stuff, and I don't do that as much anymore now. I focus more on the field, and one of our signature program or a signature series is called The Next Generation. And this is kind of a creation. Land of 10 is based in Atlanta. Cox Media Group, kind of the genesis of this was the Atlanta Journal-Constitution was having the same issues everybody else is in the newspaper industry and, you know, cutbacks and news hole shrink. And so they decided, they needed to make some sort of expansion for Georgia coverage. And that seemed to really work. So they expanded to SEC country. And then a year ago, I joined it when it was Land of 10. And then beyond, now system is called Diehards. So we have Big 12 Diehards, Pac-12, and ACC. So, but this next generation idea from them is, get to know all the newcomers, go to them, meet with them, meet with their family, meet with people who matter to them, their coaches, and write about them and their environments. And some of the more, interesting stories that I can think of that I've done recently, feature stories for sure, have been part of this. I mean, I went to, Edwardsville, Illinois and saw AJ Epineza and find out that, there's this little restaurant that named a sandwich after him, the Samoan knuckle burger, which is just gigantic. I mean, it's the biggest burger I've ever seen, and I had to eat it, but I wasn't going to eat it straight up. So I ate it and I couldn't eat it for another 20 hours afterwards. It's incredible. But, I rode around with his dad, who obviously played at Iowa 20 years ago. And it was great. It was great getting to know him and knowing the families and stuff. And what you do is, you earn their trust and gain relationships and hopefully it pays off, down the road. I mean, if you need them for something or, that you're not just some reporter calling to find out information, that they actually know you and talk to you. I mean, Brandon Smith's another one. I mean, when I was down and, they were shocked. I drove all the way to Mississippi to talk to them. But I was there when he comes home with this certificate that he made the honor roll in his last semester at his high school and, talked to his mom, and his dad in their living rooms and, find out all the stuff. His mom ran track at Ole Miss and dad ran track at Mississippi State. And they're both kind of mad that neither one, they thought of Brandon as a fallback option. And then, Brandon and his football coach are sitting there telling me, hey, Iowa came in and they had faith in me from day one. And so why should I let anybody else give me a chance if Iowa was willing to give me a chance? So you get those stories face to face and you see them. And that, I think that's really rewarding and beneficial to our coverage. And so who knows what it means long term, but I think building those relationships certainly doesn't hurt.
Hey, Scott, this is Bill again. I read that Brandon Smith story that you wrote and loved it. And just recently this past weekend, I linked your Kalenberger story on my Facebook page and got some response over that. Definitely some creepy stories along the way with him.
Yeah.
Are the kids pretty receptive to a reporter coming in and kind of doing those, deeper stories than just a 5-minute thing that we see on the recruiting sites?
Yeah, I mean, I think all of them that I dealt with were, surprised. They were happy about it. They, when you let them know, hey, I'm coming to your town, and if it's Geno Stone in Newcastle, Pennsylvania, or Lake Corman, Mississippi, or even Bettendorf, or Levi Dua down in Kelowna, you take the time to go to their place to learn about them. And, you know, Levi Dua, I'm talking to him about, you know, his farm and stuff. I mean, that's just different face to face rather than, you know, and there are some really, really good recruiting writers and, you know, two that I think are top shelf, you know, Blair Sanderson and Rob Howe. And they do an awesome job with what they do. But I think this is just different because instead of trying to get kind of information about things, you know, you're there to listen, to learn, to tell their life story. You know, Jaimon Colbert was another one. He lives in Kansas City area. And I went there the night before his graduation and they had a graduation party with him and his family. And it was just, he was kind of like, wow, really? You want to come all the way down here to talk to me about this? And I'm like, yeah, you know, and so, you know, the families are receptive. You know, I haven't really had any negative feeling or discussions from anybody about these stories.
So it sounds like we've got, you know, a good group coming in this year and possibly even next. But just generally, I mean, if I had to ask you what your thoughts were coming out of spring scrimmage, because I was there and it was ugly, versus what you're feeling now. I mean, are you saying like, are you bullish, bearish? Are you buying the 2017 Hawkeyes? Or are you selling?
I think this is a good team. You know, I'm not going to say it's a great team. And I think the schedule goes against them right now. And what I saw in the spring was that where Iowa was good, it was good. And where it was bad, it was horrible. Passing game, I've never seen it that bad before. And I've never seen wide receivers at any level of college football that bad. And the spring, I was just like, I can't believe that they're trying to field this out. But I also knew that they had some guys coming in that were, you know, better. And then, you know, when you added Quarles and Vandenberg didn't compete, I knew they would be better. But that was just a rough exhibition of you know, you might as well go two tight ends and three running backs.
Yeah.
If you're going to play like that. But what I saw, you know, a couple weeks ago was, you know, a much better team in that regard, you know, that they could pass the ball down the field and look representative. I mean, the players were getting open, and it wasn't that they were getting open because the defense sucked. It was because they were getting open because they knew how to get open. And so I think that was, I had a little bit more faith that, okay, they're going to be able to move the ball through the air. Maybe they won't be great at it, but you know, they'll be able to hit, you know, some first downs and all that. And, you know, what I see of this team is probably somewhere like a 2013, 2008 type of team where, you know, they're strong at certain areas and against teams they should beat, they will beat. But, you know, when they're going against Ohio State, Penn State, you know, Wisconsin on the road, you know, that, and then, you know, they have some other road games that'll be challenging, you know, Northwestern or Iowa State or even Nebraska, that I think that's, you know, that could play against them. So, you know, whereas you look at the Badgers and their, you know, their schedule and who they're playing, I mean, they've only got one challenging non-divisional game, and that's against Michigan the week after they play Iowa. Whereas, you know, Iowa's got Ohio State, Penn State, and you know, Michigan State had a horrible record last year, but they're not that bad. I mean, they're 1-8, but we know that's kind of one of those years where everything fell off the rails. So that's going to be tough for Iowa to get to that, say, 10-2. But I think they're going to be a tough out for everybody because they could run the ball and they could play defense. And if they can get something through the air, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if they got to the 9-win territory. Hmm. But beyond that, you know, and I'm not as down on them. Like some people have them at like 6 wins. No way. Not, you know, unless there's an injury epidemic. I mean, they're going to stop the run. They're going to rush the passer. They're going to run the football. They're going to beat people bloody. And as long as they are representative in the passing game and don't get crushed in the secondary, they're going to compete with just about everybody. So I look at them in that maybe 8-win range. That's probably about as fair as I can be. And when you look at them in the West Division, I think they could be, if not the best team, the second best team in the West. You know, I look at them versus Wisconsin and I'm like, I don't think Wisconsin's that much better than Iowa, but you know, Wisconsin plays Maryland and Indiana. Yeah. You know, Iowa plays Ohio State and then Penn State.
Well, and Wisconsin's already being bit by the injury bug, and they haven't even played a down of football yet. So that's something. Well, you know, the website, again, it's landof10.com, and that's landof10, the numeral 10.com. And we certainly appreciate having you, and wish you the best in your new successful venture, which, you know, now that thanks to the bloodbath over at CNN or ESPN and some of the other media giants, it seems like your model is the is painting the way to the future here.
It seems to, you know, it has taken off, and, you know, we're actually exceeding our goals in multiple ways, both in page views and financial success, which is good. We've been able to maybe rescue a few of those cast-offs, which has been helpful. You know, Jesse Temple, for one, you know, covered Wisconsin for ESPN. Now he covers Wisconsin for us. He's terrific. Austin Ward did the same with Ohio State, and he's with us now for Ohio State. So, you know, we're building it. We've got Cox behind us, which is a good thing. And so, yeah, I think that's what she said. All right, man.
Oh. Woo. That's getting cut. Awesome. Well, thanks again. We look forward to chatting with you again as the season goes on, and I hope you're right. You know, 2013 was one of my favorite squads, I think, just because they were not expected to do much, and they were gritty team. So
2008 was awesome too. That was the big Sean Green breakout year too.
Right.
And gave then, LSU all they could handle in the bowl game. And that was my last question for you, Scott, real quick. Is it too much to say that they need to perform in the bowl game, whatever they got? I'm not even saying necessarily win, but they got to perform this next bowl game, don't they?
I think the biggest problem with Iowa sports, period, is that it's given its fans unsatisfactory finishes. And that's in football, that's in men's basketball, and that's in wrestling. And that's what they absolutely have to correct this year. Now, I'm not suggesting that they need to go win the national title in any of those sports, but what I'm saying is when you look at football, they lost 5 straight bowl games. That's a disappointment that carries over long term. I mean, you know, the Rose Bowl. I mean, how many people went out there and said, okay, this is my Christmas present. This is, you know, and then boom, you know, they go right down to the pot. Same thing with the Outback Bowl. And yeah, you know, and the Tax Slayer before that. Yeah, they're going to have to perform, and they need to win one of these games. And then likewise with basketball. You know, a couple of years ago when they're ranked as high as 3rd in the country and they don't get to the Sweet 16, that's a letdown. You know, and then wrestling, of course, you know, hasn't won the national title since 2010. So, you know, they have to give their fans something to kind of beat on their chest and say, yeah, we're good. We did something. You know, the Orange Bowl year being one of them, or, you know, even if you're 8-4, but you go to the Holiday Bowl and you beat Washington State or something like that, then you feel like, okay, you know, a successful conclusion. Because right now, all these years, I mean, even, you know, basketball, you know, going 1-1 in the postseason, you want to get that Sweet 16, and likewise, you need a bowl win. And I think that's where Iowa is right now. If they lose another bowl game, you know, it's going to be hard to get those fans excited again, you know, and you know, especially if they get crushed the way they have the last 3 years.
Hell, it knocked our podcast off the air for a full year. So there you're not kidding. Well, hey, Scott, thanks again for coming on. I'm pretty sure we'll talk to you at least once, maybe a couple more times this football season. But mark down, I'm going to want to chat with you about basketball, too, because there's some really exciting stuff brewing on that front. So good stuff.
All right. Thanks, Tori. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Scott.
Thanks, Scott.
Oh, that was always good to talk to Scott. And I'm a little more excited, Tori, than I was perhaps a few months ago. So I tell you what, let's go around the horn, and from each of you guys, I'm going to ask for a prediction, just your general reaction to where the squad is for the season coming up, your prediction for this game against Wyoming, you know, including your pick to click player, as we always do, Tori, but and anything else you think you might see or hear or experience in Iowa City this weekend. Tori, why don't you go first?
Well, I guess optimism must be the theme of the night. We're recording here, by the way, on Monday night, so I just wrapped up writing my first Tuesdays with Torby column, and in that I'd even mentioned that, you know, around June or so, I had this team pegged at 7-5-ish, and an acceptable, if not really exciting, 7-5, because, you know, and I think Scott mentioned a little bit, there are some rebuilding elements to this team. You know, it's a very young team. You've got a new coordinator. You've got some other new coaches. So I think it's actually one of those years where you look at it and you say it's a rebuilding year, and you're okay with that. But, you know, the addition of James Butler, the adding of Matt Quarles, another guy whose name we didn't even mention, the JUCO All-American wide receiver that I think it's Nick Easley kid. I think we added a few playmakers. The defense is already going to be good, really good. I mean, maybe the best defensive line, solid secondary, amazing linebackers led by Josie Jewell. So when Ferentz has a kick-ass defensive line and a kick-ass running game, his teams do well. So I think the schedule is hard, but I'm going out on a limb and saying 8-4. And I think that's going to include, as usual, one game that we lose that we're shaking our heads. How the hell do we lose to that team? And I think we'll have one of those signature wins that Ferentz seems to be able to pull out, whether it's Penn State, at Nebraska, against Michigan, at Wisconsin. I think it's going to be an 8-4 year with one shocker plus side and one shocker on the negative side. As for this week against Wyoming, I am afraid of their quarterback, that Josh Allen. He's supposed to be maybe the first quarterback picked in the NFL draft. I don't think they have a lot around him, though. And again, I think Iowa's too big, too strong up front on both sides, offense and defense. So I think it's going to be one of those wear them down games, kind of like some of those Northern Illinois games, UNI games we've seen in the past. I'm going to say 35-17 Iowa. And I think James Butler has a lot to prove and wants to show that he belongs in the Big Ten and on the Hawkeyes. He's my pick to click. As for around the game, I think we're actually going to get through a whole first week without Bill saying F Nebraska. That's my bold prediction of the week.
Awesome. Well, you can ruin that right now, Bill.
I said that 10 times already today.
We don't want to get explicitly tagged on iTunes, so please wait until after we stop the recording. So what's your prediction?
Yeah, I think, you know, this is why I get so down in the dumps after we start losing, because I, you know, this time of year I'm so sky high on the team. I'm going to say 10-3. That's with a bowl game, bowl win.
Wow.
That's losses to Ohio State, Penn State, somebody stupid. And then we get a really good win in there too somewhere. So I'm pretty optimistic about that. I think that our run game in the defense are going to be good enough. And then the receivers, the new guys, new QBs, anything they can add will be icing on the cake. So put me down for 10-3 with a bowl win. As far as Wyoming is concerned, I think we handle them in a not very comfortable fashion. Put me down for 27-17. I think Josh Allen is able to throw it around between the 20s. I think the defense tightens up and holds them to 17.
Awesome. Any other prediction? You're going to go to the game, right? We're going to see you.
I will be there, yeah. I guess pick to click player. Let's go Omaha zone, Noah Fant. Been a year in the system now. He's big, versatile playmaker at tight end. I like Noah Fant. Yeah, I guess my prediction will be that at some point, Tori is going to have to be calming you and me down, Jim, this season about, you know, things aren't working out as well as we thought they would. Now we're pessimists, we're bad fans, etc.
Talking to
I've never, ever said bad fans. I've never said bad fans, just... Sometimes I don't think you're emotionally cut out to be college football fans.
Well, that may be true. But then again, who is anymore? I mean, there's just such an investment in this. So I'm actually, you know, not surprisingly, I'm actually on the lower end of the prediction. Coming out of that spring game, which, by the way, for the record and for the audience, you two guys stood me up. I mean, we had this big plan to go to the spring game and meet up there, and I ended up taking a bunch of exchange students. So thanks for that. But
yeah, it was a crappy weather day with a crappy play on the field. We kind of knew.
The highlight of the night was the Poly Ice Pizza, taking all those girls out for Poly Ice Pizza and blowing their minds. Something I think they'll all take back to their respective countries. But yeah, I think like Docterman, I was just shaking my head at the passing game. I mean, I've seen, you know, junior varsity high school teams in better sync than what we saw there from both the quarterbacks and all the receivers. So they only had one direction to go, and that was up, right? But I think I agree that, you know, the addition of James Butler and the addition of the JUCO, I'm actually more excited about the JUCO receiver than the transfer. I think the transfer, Quarles, is probably going to make his splash next year because he has two years. But I think we're actually trending right now in the right direction. And I was probably thinking like, you know, 6-6 and maybe like a Music City Foster Farms type year for rebuilding, which is not, I guess, the end of the world. At least you're bowl eligible. But I think I'm going to bump it up maybe to 8-4 and maybe go to that Holiday Bowl, Tori. Maybe, you know, actually come away with a bowl win. So I think I'm going to go 8-4 for Wyoming. I guess maybe whistling past the graveyard here. I'm not too worried about a quarterback that can light you up if he doesn't have a line or receivers. We faced this before in the Big Ten, and the answer is establish a run game, keep him on the bench, and when he gets on the field, keep him on his back, right? And it seems like we have all the ingredients to do that. So, so you know, I'm thinking it's maybe not going to be quite as bad. Maybe like, you know, all the hype around Roethlisberger in 2003 when he almost kicked my ass for taunting him. So I'm going to say we get somewhere in the 35-24 range. And my pick to click is the secondary, the young guys in the secondary. I think they get they cover well and they take away a lot of his options, and maybe even a pick six or a big play on special teams. I'm looking forward to something like that. And for predictions, I don't know, Tori. I'm thinking that we're going to go to the mill like we always do, and we're going to clean off two plates of chicken wings like usual. I'm hoping Bill, you and your wife will be there, and we'll have our first Saturday victory beer in the books. So that's where I'm thinking we're headed.
That's like the least bold prediction I have ever heard anyone give. I mean, that's just a given. I think you're doing it wrong.
You think so? I mean, we eat the chicken wings win or lose, right?
Like, exactly. So that doesn't get to count towards whoever wins the travel trophy.
No, it's just, okay, so we do have a traveling trophy this year. We are setting that up, and it's going to be, what is it again, Bill? Can you describe this holy grail, this object of our passion that we are all seeking to obtain and own and control?
It is an Iowa Hawkeye-themed little gnome guy. He's about a foot tall, and he's a Christmas Santa Clausy Iowa Hawkeye fan.
So he's like a garden gnome.
Yeah, a little smaller than that. I wouldn't let him outside.
So you know how the N on the Nebraska helmet stands for knowledge, right? So I say we call this thing the gnome of canoeing, because it's showing that you know what's going to happen, the prediction. So the Iowa gnome of canoeing.
It's the gnome of knowledge.
The gnome of knowledge. Knowledge. Yes.
Perfect. And you're going to bring him, right? You're going to make the drive from Omaha with this thing in your lap.
I will indeed. He's a traveling gnome.
And we'll post pictures of the winner with the traveling gnome, the gnome of canoeing, of knowledge, on our website, where you can check out the 12 Saturdays podcast, which is bulliesofthebig10.com, all spelled out. And we'll have archived podcasts there, some pictures, some chat. So hit us up there, too.
All right. So that'll wrap us up for week zero of the 2017 season and the first episode of our renaissance of the 12 Saturdays. And yes, please go to bulliesofthebig10.com and check out the website, the associated website. Leave your thoughts, leave your comments, leave your criticism. I mean, it would be the first time in the world that anybody was ever mean or snotty on the internet, I'm sure.
All right.
And look for us on iTunes. We're going to try something new this year. We're going to try and get published on some other platforms like Stitcher and Google Play, but we're still pretty much a web and iTunes for the moment until we get that figured out. But big things are coming.
So, Jim, we never discussed what Bill's sign-off is going to be, because, you know, you're always the on Iowa, and I'm Go Hawks. What does Bill get to say?
That's a good question. We really haven't left anything on the table for Bill to sign off.
And you guys already said that I can't say how I feel about Nebraska, lest we...
Well, I mean, that's just, we know that. That's just like, again, so.
Risk getting censored.
Who is that? Is that, that's like, what is it? That's like Cato, the Roman Senate, where he ended every speech with Carthage must be destroyed.
Oh, wait, okay, here we go. So we don't have to go F-bomb, though. How about, you say on Iowa, I say go Hawks, and Bill says Nebraska sucks.
Or beat Nebraska.
Or Nebraska sucks.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm on board with this. Feeling? Probably something, by the way, for our listeners, probably something we should have arranged before we hit the record button. But, you know, they get to see a little bit of the behind the scenes. So I'll take us out on Iowa.
Go Hawks.
Nebraska sucks.